This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
So, Brandon, let's talk about professional wrestling.
Professional wrestling, you know, that's a topic I know a little bit about.
I've talked to you in the past. That's a farce right there. You know quite a bit about.
I mean, I've only been watching it like 25, 30 years now.
Yeah,
it's just a little bit of time.
I guess let's just cover the big news of the week real quick and get it out of the way. Daniel Bryan returns, medically cleared, and returns to wrestling.
All in like the same day.
Yeah. What do you think about that?
I mean, I think it's awesome because, I mean, who doesn't love Daniel Bryan? The timing is a little fishy to me, you know. I see the WWE, you know, trying to cash in some dollars real quick before that contract ends.
Yeah, his contract expires on September 23rd of this year. It's not September. September 1st. Sorry, his contract expires on September 1st, which is the same day as the All In show.
Yep. And he has an open invitation to that, you know, and I'm pretty sure he has an open invitation to every independent in the world right now.
You know, he makes his return. He announces, you know, it's a great passion, great promo to open SmackDown. Do you think they jumped the shark by announcing earlier in the day that he's medically cleared? Or do you think they were like, we need to tell people so they'll tune in?
I mean, obviously they got a ratings bump out of it, so it works for the tuning in.
Yeah.
But I mean, they screwed up the big announcement. I mean, could you imagine the chaos that would be going nuts on like Twitter if it's just like, oh my God, turn on SmackDown,
exactly,
you know, turn it on.
Pardon me, which is what they used to do when they used to not spoil anything or they didn't have social media to tell people about it, you know, like. You'd be watching it, something would happen, and people would call their friends and tell their friends, you gotta watch Raw, you gotta turn Raw, you gotta turn Raw, you gotta turn SmackDown, you gotta turn on Nitro, whatever it was.
Oh, exactly.
Sometimes I feel like they're trying to like get ahead of the game, so we wanna release this information before it gets out there. So we can control the narrative.
And I get that, and again, it helps their advertising bucks and all that good stuff, but to me, that lessens the excitement. I mean, it was like, okay, he's approved, so probably tonight he's going to do something. And to be honest, I didn't watch it live. I watched it on YouTube after it aired. I mean, because it was like, okay, I know what's going to happen.
I didn't. I was off. I didn't watch it live either. I watched movies, and then I watched it later on when it was on Hulu. So.
Yeah, I mean, but when you have that anticipation, where it's just like, oh my gosh, you know, I had like, if you had been watching it live and he had come back. I can almost guarantee you would have sent me a message saying, oh my God, Daniel Bryan just came back.
Absolutely, I would have.
And I would have been like, are you shitting me? I mean, like, really?
As soon as I read the thing, I sent you a message and said, holy shit, did you see Daniel Bryan's medical clear?
Exactly. I mean, and that's what I love about wrestling.
Yep.
And that's why it sucks when the WWE does this all the time. Because, like, over the last, I'd say, what, 3 or 4 years, they kind of gave up on the surprises. Like, if they can leak it ahead of time or, you know, hint at it, whatever they can do to get you to tune in, they're going to do that.
I mean, they have – you're right. For the most part, they have. They've done a few as far as, like, the Hardys returning at WrestleMania last year. Ronda Rousey making her debut – at the end of the Royal Rumble this year. So they've managed to keep a couple under their hat, but to me this was just like, hey, we need the ratings.
Yeah.
Because it's not like he's going to come out for a match, which, I mean, so he does his promo at the beginning of the show, basically, you know, saying I'm back, thank you supporting me, my wife was a great support, blah, blah, blah. And then at the end of the show he comes out to address Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens, who are just on, like, you know, they're fantastic. You know, talking about like Texas Rangers pulling them over and on and on and on. It was just, I thought that was great. And then, of course, Daniel Bryan says, like, hey, you know what? You guys went too far. Maybe Shane was right. Maybe I was living vicariously through you. I don't need to anymore. So you're fired. Sorry. I'm really sorry about that. But this is just the way it has to be. You can't attack your boss that way. And he tries to be like, we all good guys. And the thing was, is like, if he would have said the same promo last week, quote unquote, before he was medically cleared, you could see Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn shaking his hand and walking away and not jumping him. However, if you now that we know he's medically cleared, it's like immediately this just screams they're going to beat him up, you know, and they did. And yep. Then he immediately takes two bumps landing on his head with those corner drop kicks.
Exactly. I kind of felt like that might have been a jab at Vince.
Yeah.
Because, you know, he said he's been cleared for a while. Like, he was no reason for him to be benched. So I think he was just trying to say, look, I'm good.
Yeah. I think it would have been more effective if he would have fired them and then they beat the shit out of him and then they attacked him. And then he came back and then he made the announcement of, guess what? I've been medically cleared. And then he goes after him or something like that. You know what I mean? Like, I don't know. I think that would have almost been cooler. Or he gets beat up and then he makes the comeback next week when he comes to the ring or something. I don't know. I'm not going to, I guess, couch book it now. But regardless, it was effective because there's a couple things that have happened, or at least one thing that I thought was fantastic that happened since then, which was on Twitter, Kevin Owens changed his name back to Kevin Steen, and he's at Fight Steen Fight.
Yeah, which was very neat. And
yeah.
I mean, obviously, I don't think anybody's buying it, but that's cool. I love it when wrestling kind of transcends that, you know, where it goes into yep. Twitter or social media, and they do it right.
Yep. Well, I've also noticed recently that, like, for instance, Daniel Bryan has also had, if you look at his, I don't know about his Twitter, but if you look at his Instagram, it's Daniel Bryanson.
It's, really?
Yes. His Instagram is Daniel Bryanson, not Daniel Bryan.
Interesting.
Or Bryan Danielson, I mean. Jeez, I can't even say his name the correct way anymore. It's been so damn long.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I didn't even think twice about it either when you were saying it.
it's completely wrong. Yeah, so I don't know. But, excuse me. You know, on Twitter, he's still at WWE Daniel Bryan. But yeah, I noticed on Instagram he's Bryan Danielson. So
what do you think? What's the end game here? Okay, so we build up a match at WrestleMania, and I mean, is this the way Vince can keep his hooks in them so nobody else can make money off of them? Or does September 1st he's just like, yeah, peace out, I'm gonna go build my legacy elsewhere?
Well, okay, so what's really cool, I mean I don't know, here's going real quick, I want to answer your question, but I just want to follow up with this. If you go to Kevin Steen, if you go to his Twitter, it does come up. If you do a search, it comes up Kevin Owens. You click on it, and then it automatically switches to Kevin Steen. And it's at Fight Steen Fight. He lost his blue check mark.
Oh, really?
Yep. And his photo is black, and his, like, top page thing is all black. So it's all blacked out as far as there's no photos or anything like that. And then he just tweeted 2 days ago after it happened, you know, he tweeted hashtag fight for your dreams or something like that. I don't know if that was Daniel Bryan related or after. But yeah, so, you know, he's at Kevin Steen on Twitter. And there was some rumbling with some friends of mine, whatever, we were discussing the possibility of Kevin Steen and Sami Zayn showing up at Sami Zayn, still Sami Zayn, by the way, but Kevin Steen and Sami Zayn showing up at PWG tomorrow night as El Generico and Kevin Steen.
That would be amazing.
You know,
that would totally be cool.
Yeah. So I don't know. We'll see. We'll see what happens. At the end of the day, I kind of hate the fact that Daniel Bryan's big return is for him to have a tag team match at WrestleMania with Shane against Kevin Owens and Sami Zayn. Because I feel like that's what's coming.
And to be honest, I'm so over Shane. I don't.
Oh, me too.
I mean, it was fun in the 90s, but now I'm done. So I don't care to see him wrestle.
I actually, you know, I saw him wrestle at a house show in Maine. It was a Portland street fight, Portland, Maine, against Kane. So that was kind of cool because I got Shane McMahon's wrestling at a house show. That's pretty fucking cool, you know. But anyways, to go back to answering your question, you know, there's a big part of me that wants to see when his contract expires on September 1st. That he goes to New Japan, he goes to the Indies, he goes to Ring of Honor. Like, I would love to see him go that route. But at the same time, you know, some people argue, well, he's being crazy to give up all that money he could make in WWE. But at the same time, you have, like, guys like the Young Bucks and Cody Rhodes and others, Joey Ryan even, who have proven you don't need to be in the WWE to make money and to be a top talent in wrestling in the United States or in the world. And Brian Danielson's got a big enough name where he doesn't need to be in the WWE. And so one of my concerns is, does he have that clause in his contract where they can automatically roll it over on him, or they can make him sit out even longer again, or, you know, does he have like an ultimate September 1st, his contract expired, he can do whatever he wants from that point? Does he have a 90-day no-compete clause? I mean, I don't know. What would you like to see him do?
I would love to see him leave. I mean, I make no qualms. I'm not the biggest WWE fan right now. I would love to see him show up at All In if he could. Yeah. I would love to see him go to New Japan and pull a Jericho, and I think that would make Wrestle Kingdom massive next year. I mean, there's so many dream bookings. I mean, even if he showed up at All In, and let's say they managed to get CM Punk at All In, I mean, you're talking, huge. I think deep down, I don't think he's going anywhere. I
know. I don't think so either, unfortunately.
I don't think he's going to turn down the paycheck. And I know he's destroyed his bodies on the indies for so long. You know, he doesn't have to do that again. And, you know, you got to know that always in the back of his head, the injury is going to be there. So will he be the same guy in New Japan that he was or could have been, you know, over the last 5 or 6 years or no? So, yeah, I think he'll stick around. And to be honest, I think they'll misuse him as usual. And that'll be that.
Yeah. Unfortunately, I think you're right.
Yeah. It's a shame.
I really think you're right. Yeah.
You know what I would actually really, I think, would really work for me? I would like to see him leave and go to Impact. I think they could build around him. I think that he would, you know, coming up, you know, 6 months from now, you know, hopefully with the new regime in and all the new stuff going, I think they could build that brand around him and make it, you know, to take it to a whole other level. I really do.
I don't know. It took him so long to prove what he wanted to prove in WWE, and you know he won't have to start over again.
No, because they'll give him the belt the first night. Because that's what they do.
I just don't want him to get wasted. And I don't know. I think I want to see him leave. I want to see him go to New Japan. I want him to see him go to Ring of Honor. If he went to Impact Wrestling, it would make me watch Impact Wrestling. You know, but I'd like to see him go back to PWG. I like to see him do what Cody did, which is work the indies for a year, working all the small shows and everything like that as well. But then again, you know, depending on, you know, his injury, yes, he's medically cleared. Yes, everything looks great. But does he want to risk working in a dumpy ring somewhere?
Yeah.
You know, we're in the WWE. He could almost possibly have a Brock Lesnar type contract where he wrestles no house shows, just does TV, pay-per-views, wrestles sparingly, you know what I mean, to ensure he's not going to have any issues. But then again, you look at Daniel Bryan, and yeah, he's always done a lot of high-flying stuff, and he's done some like dives to the outside of the ring, but look at Zack Sabre Jr. He does none of that. He's completely mat-based submission-style wrestling. And you know Daniel Bryan has the chops for that. He could alternate his style, which obviously he's not because of those fucking corner drop kicks we just saw. That I'm saying this out loud.
Yeah.
you know, he could alter his style so he's not taking those high impact bumps anymore, and just doing the more mat based submission based wrestling. So I don't know. I'm gonna enjoy this summer, but I'd like to see him leave.
Yeah, and one thing I can always say is, a great way to see what he could do on his mat based wrestling is, yeah, if you go back to Over the Limit 2012, him and CM Punk had a match for the WWE title. I was actually there. It was here in Raleigh.
Oh, that's awesome.
Yeah, they had it was a horrible pay-per-view except for that match, but because that was the John Laurinaitis, John Cena debacle. But they had, you know, bragged before the show that they were going to do moves that nobody had seen before, and there's a ton of mat-based wrestling in that match, you know, and it still stands out like a sore thumb in the WWE for the last, God, you know, forever. So definitely worth checking out.
Over the Limit 2012, I will have to check that out. Is that the only WWE pay-per-view you've been to?
Other than WrestleMania 27.
Right, I knew you went to fair enough. Other than WrestleMania 27, I mean.
Yeah, that's the only one. They don't bring pay-per-views to North Carolina much. Definitely not to Raleigh. We don't, you know, when WCW died, Southern Wrestling kind of died here. So yeah, we'll come out for indies, but we don't come out for the WWE anymore. So we're pretty much restricted to just house shows. We don't even really get SmackDown anymore.
I guess quick question. I know we've probably answered this before, but I need my memory jogged. Did you go to a lot of WCW shows? Go ahead.
Oh no, I love WCW. I never went to a single WCW show.
Did you see they just put a bunch of episodes of Thunder on the network?
I did, and I haven't dug into them yet. Yeah. Because I actually signed up for Global Wrestling Network this week, or decided to do my 30-day free trial.
Yeah.
But yeah, I look forward to digging into that because I love Thunder. I love the WCW B and C shows worldwide and everything else. I love that they looked unique and they felt unique. I loved every bit of that. And I missed out on it because growing up as a teenager, I was born in 83. So, you know, when WCW was out by the time I was 18. But my dad, he would watch WWF and he got behind it, so he had no problem taking me to shows like that. But WCW, ECW, he could give two shits less for.
Yeah.
Never a single show.
See, it's amazing. Like, I'm 4 years older than you, but that 4 years makes such a tremendous difference because, like you said, by the time WCW died, you were 18. When WCW died, I was 22. So, like, I have four more years of absorbing that and all those secondary shows and B shows when I'm, you know, 12 and 13 in the early 90s when they're really popular.
So, oh, yeah.
Yeah, it's amazing how it's only 4 years, and as adults it doesn't make a difference. But when you're talking about things like, you know, like watching like that, it really does make a difference. I live in Maine. The last time WWE did TV in Maine was a Raw in 1997.
Oh God!
I think they did the Survivor Series in Boston or Worcester or something like that, and then the next night they did Raw. And it's the night where Steve Austin forfeited the Intercontinental title to The Rock. So that is also the only title change to ever take, only WWE title change to ever take place in Maine, is a forfeiture of a title. And then the next night on Tuesday they taped WWE in New Hampshire for Raw the following week, and that is the night that Austin threw the belt off the bridge.
I remember that night like it was yesterday.
Okay, so the Raw the week before, that's the last time WWE did TV of any kind in Maine.
That's insane. That was 20 years ago, over 20 years ago.
Yeah, we've never had a pay-per-view in Maine. We've only had house shows. Since 1997, we've only had house shows. And I did manage to go to a TV taping in 1995. They did in Portland. I did not go to that TV taping in 97, that Raw one. I went to a TV taping in 1995 of where they did tape Superstars and Wrestling Challenge and some Action Zone stuff. And it was a five-hour show with a bunch of squash matches, and then we got the main event was a dark match rehearsal of the casket match between Undertaker and Kama that was upcoming at Survivors at SummerSlam that year. It was like August 5th or 15th, 1995 is when I went to that TV taping.
Wow, and you got a casket match. At least that made up for it.
Oh, we got a casket match. We got a bunch of jobbers. We got Rad Radford.
Oh.
We got a dark match of Sid against Shawn Michaels. We got the episode of Superstars where The Undertaker had those fans that were, you know, painted white faced and wearing black turtlenecks, and it's that ringside with the black wreath, this and that, when Kama pulled the wreath in the ring and wrecked it. The the fan then went in the ring to get the stuff, and then Kama beat him up. That was in Portland. We got an angle where Hakushi fought Skip, and Barry Horowitz did a run in and distracted him, so Hakushi pinned him and got the roll up win. I mean, like, I remember so much of this show, but it was a 5-hour TV taping, and it was one match after another. And if I go back to look at it, I think we got 30 something matches if I were to go back to look at my results.
Wow, that's crazy.
Yeah, I think I want to say it was legit like 30 something matches. It was a long show.
Yeah, I mean, I've been to wrestling shows that run, you know, 4 or 4.5 hours, and even with good quality wrestling, that's a long ass time.
It is, yeah. But you know what? It was just like, I look back now and I'm like, I'm so glad I got to go to that. Because that was one, I mean, the absolute last match for Wrestling Challenge was filmed in Portland, Maine, and I was there for it. The last match that aired on Wrestling Challenge was filmed in Portland, Maine.
That's awesome. That's some awesome trivia.
They did some filming for a Wrestling Challenge, like interviews or other matches or whatever. Like that one Wrestling Challenge episode had matches from a couple different venues. But yeah, so let's see here. All right, so I got the result in front of me. We got it was taped August 15th, 1995, and then like Wrestling Challenge, August 27th, 1995, featured Doc Hendricks conducting an interview with Bret Hart. That was in the ring. It was over his jacket getting stolen by Jean Lafitte there, or was ever the fucking Carl Pierre Ouellette, whatever his French pirate gimmick name was. But we got action on Skip pinned Bob Holly with his feet on the ropes. Let's see here. And then Sonny got pushed off the ring apron and Skip had to carry the back. Rad Radford beat Matt Hardy. Doink the Clown beat Joe Hancock. Jacob and Eli Blue defeated a couple of jobbers. I don't know who. Let's see here. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14. 15, 16, 17, 18, 19, 20, Jean-Pierre Lafitte, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25, 26 matches was on the card. They taped episodes of Wrestling Challenge, segments for Wrestling Challenge for August 27th, Action Zone for September 3rd, Wrestling Challenge for August 20th, Superstars for August 19th, Superstars for August 26th, Superstars for September 2nd, and then the dark matches. We got Bret Hart against Isaac Yankem, Shawn Michaels against Sid, Diesel against King Mabel, and the casket match. But yeah, so there's some weird names on here too, like Bam Bam Bigelow wrestled, beat a jobber. Jean-Pierre Lafitte defeated Rodney Onaway, and I believe Rodney Onaway Superhero in Training, Rosie.
Oh, okay.
Let's see here. 1-2-3 Kid beat Skip. That was the one. 1-2-3 Kid beat Skip after Bear Horowitz distracted him. The Brooklyn Brawler. Bret Hart against Rad Radford. I got to see Waylon Mercy wrestle Tony Roy. So that was cool. Savio Vega, The Smoking Guns, again, the Godwins, Razor Ramon, Jacob and Eli Blue, a lot of jobber matches. It was pretty damn cool. And a lot of these jobbers, like, I could say their names, you wouldn't know them, but I know them, like Tony Roy, Burt Centenaro, Phil Apollo, Brian Walsh, Mike Bell.
Yeah, I know Mike Bell. The rest of them, no.
They're Northeast guys. That's why I saw independent shows and everything. So, yeah, that was the only – I've been to Monday Night Raw, and I've been to WrestleMania – Survivor Series, SummerSlam, Royal Rumble, and Backlash. So, and then for WCW, I went to two shows. I did a Saturday night TV taping they did in Portland at the Cumberland County Civic Center in 1998. And I went to a Monday Nitro in Boston. So that was cool. At the Fleet Center, as they called it then.
You've been to some impressive shows. Speaking of which, you went to one recently.
I did.
Yeah, that was my segue.
That was a great segue. I went to Madison Square Garden last week.
Just Madison Square Garden?
Just Madison Square Garden. Just, you know, finally checking that one off the bucket list, the lifelong dream of something I've always wanted to do. And okay, so my buddy lives in New Bedford, Mass. And actually, that 1995 TV taping I was just talking about, I went to him with that. I went to that show with him. And here's another little fun fact that no one's going to care about besides me and him. March 16th, 1997 was the first ever independent show I went to. And March 16th, 2018, I finally went to Madison Square Garden. So that's kind of neat, you know, the date.
Yeah,
so he lives down in New Bedford, Mass. Now, so I actually drove down to his house, like 4 hours, 3.5 hours from where I live. And then the next day, on Friday, we took the train into into New York. And you get off the train, and you go up, you know, you have to go up a couple flights of stairs or whatever it is, and then you walk outside. And when we walked outside, literally, like, I opened the door to go outside. I'm like, holy shit, there's the garden. It was literally right in front of us. Like, I was just crazy. Like, it was right there. Like, the building I've always wanted to see in person and go to and everything like that, literally the second I walked outside from the train, it's there in front of me. So that was pretty damn cool. I took a bunch of pictures. If you want to know a lot of details, I wrote a nice blog about it on the Wrestling Insomniac. Have you perused that yet, Brandon?
I have.
Okay,
it
cool.
is fantastic. I highly recommend everybody check it out. I love that you captured the entire experience, which is what I told you I wanted. I didn't want just a match highlight. I love that you captured everything from the train. I mean, where you ate, eating burgers at 9 o'clock in the morning. I mean,
yeah.
Fantastic stuff.
Yeah. Those are my blogs. That's how I write a blog.
Well, that's why I could live vicariously through you, because I don't see myself getting to Madison Square Garden anytime soon. So at least I can pretend like I went.
We literally have talked about this. Like, I'm pretty sure it was even before that TV taping in 95. You know, we've talked about this for 24 years or whatever. It's like, oh, we should do this. We got to do this. And there was always a reason not to. Like, oh, I don't want to do a pay-per-view. And I don't want to do a TV taping. WrestleMania 20 is like, oh, we should have gone for WrestleMania 20. Yeah, we should have, you know, but whatever. It is what it is. But it was just the point of, like, I wanted to do a house show. I wanted to have that feel like when I used to watch it on TV when I was a kid. Like, when I'd watch the old Best of the WWE from Coliseum Home Videos, or watch Primetime Wrestling, or even now watching the old shows at Madison Square Garden. It's like, that's the place to be. That's what's always been hyped. It's the world's most famous arena, and I want to go there, and I want to have that experience. And I don't want to do a TV taping, because I don't want, you know, of my three-hour wrestling show, I don't want 2 hours of talking. I want to watch wrestling. And
I can understand that.
So, like, literally after talking about it for 24 years, this past December, I was just like, we just need to do it. We need to stop talking about it. We just need to do it. And they had just done their holiday house show, and the pre-sale code got leaked out there, and it was like tickets were on sale, and so I was looking at them. And so he was just like, yeah, we just need to do it. Screw it. Let's just do it. And so we bought tickets. And to further pressure on us, we booked the hotel, and he used his points. So it's like, well, we can't waste the points. We can't, you know, because the tickets you could resell, but we're stuck with that hotel. And then to put further pressure on us, like, I bought our train tickets, you know, at $200. So, like, we had spent $400, and it's like, well, we're both too cheap to back out now. So it's like we had to force our hands. And it's weird to say it in that aspect, but it's like, it's not just like driving next door. It's a hall. And so, like, I'm so glad. You know, I'm so glad we finally just said, screw it, let's do it. If I had to do it over again, I probably would have gone for the July show, just because it was still pretty damn cold in March down there in New York. But, you know, it was great. You know, like I said, we stepped off the train, and right there in front of us was the garden. So immediately I took a picture, and then we did a selfie with the garden behind us. And then, you know, we went to our hotel, dropped our bags off. And then there's a couple of places we went to. We had a few hours to kill. Literally, we were in New York for like 24 hours. We got there, train got there at like 10 past 10 or 20 past 10 in the morning. And then the next day at 10 o'clock, our train was leaving. So we made the most of the 24 hours. If you're ever in New York, go to the Houdini Museum. It is amazing. It's on the fourth floor of this building. There's no signage or anything that tells you it's there. You just have to know where it is. I went and asked the doorman. I was like, is the Houdini Museum here? And he's like, yep, fourth floor. And then you get off the elevator and you look left and there's like a piece of paper, like an 8x10, 8.5x11 sheet of paper that just says like Houdini Museum. There it is, apparently. But that was awesome. You can read about that, see some pictures I took on the blog. Then we went to Ripley's, Believe It or Not. He had wanted to go, and that was really nice as well. Very expensive, but really nice. Again, I put a bunch of pictures and information on the blog on that as well. Coming out of Ripley's, you know, we went to Grace Papaya to get a hot dog, because you got to do that. Not to get a papaya drink, just a hot dog. Did Times Square, and it was really cool to see, like, oh, I've seen that ticker on TV, or I've seen it on the news or movies, and oh, that's where the ball drops, and oh, that's this. Just to see a bunch of things I've recognized or seen on TV before, kind of like, wow, this is really cool to see it in person. And then, like, you know, 20 minutes later, some guy's trying to force you to buy his CD, and I'm like, what is anything that about me that looks like I want a rap CD? You know, I'm wearing a flannel shirt. I don't want a rap CD, thank you. Or, like, you know, the people in the character costumes who, like, they don't have their heads on, and so they're just kind of milling around, and if you try to, like, just take a picture, they're like, oh, no, you can't take a picture. And so all the hustlers and homeless people and scam people and this and that and everything, it's just kind of like, huh, okay. So, like, after, like, 20 minutes, I was kind of through, and I didn't really, in my mind, I don't really have a reason to go back, and except for my wife to go, because she's never been, or if we could go see a Broadway show, because that's, we're on Broadway. So it was cool to see it once, but, you know, and it could maybe the fact that it was kind of cold. Like, the sun was out, and as long as the wind wasn't blowing, it wasn't bad, but, I mean, it was a constant, like, I don't know, 40s, so it wasn't exceptionally comfortable, but yeah. It was fun. One of the coolest things is there was a street vendor who was selling some records, and we come out of Midtown Comics, which, by the way, not impressed with. I can explain that later, but we walk out and we're walking down the street, and I look and he's selling Pile Driver, the Rustling Album 2 on vinyl, and he wants $40 for it, and he wouldn't budge. If he would have taken 20, I would have taken that home with me. It was just so random to see it. You know, he had maybe 50 records, and one of them is that. That was pretty cool, so. But, you know, we walked into the garden, and we were on the 8th floor. And, of course, the building's round. So we literally, like, kind of went up to the 8th floor and then just walked all the way around the concourse, waiting until we found our seats. And we both wanted to wait to that moment. We finally went into our seats, and then you walk through, and then, oh, there it is. You see it for the first time. But one end on the 8th floor is completely open. It's like they have the way they've redesigned it, you have, like, the food behind you, and then there's actually, like, kind of like counter seats they sell that look into the stadium or whatever. So we came around that corner. It was like, there it is. So we still had kind of that moment, but so I was like, holy shit, there it is. I can't believe it, you know. And that iconic ceiling, that round ceiling, you know, that you see in all the photos when they pop it up on the screen, like, welcome to Madison Square Garden, and they have the camera shot, and it's that side shot of the whole crowd and the ring and the roof and the ceiling, whatever you want to call it. And to me, it's just like, I wanted to get that picture. Like, that's a picture I need to take when this building is full of people and everything. And I think once the show started, I think I captured my version of that.
You really did. You took an amazing picture. I mean, and it's everything I think of when I think of Madison Square Garden, which, you know, never been there, but having watched, you know, it in movies and, of course, yeah, old wrestling, that was the, like, essential photo that you could possibly take.
Yeah, and that's exactly my thought as well. Like, this is the picture I need to take. So we walked all the way around that 8th floor concourse and everything, and we still had quite a bit of time before the show started, like, over an hour. And along the way, like, they have these, like, displays, and they're big. And it's like talking about his historic moment at the Garden, where like Rocky Marciano wrestled, boxed like Joe Louis or something like that. And it has like their trunks and articles about it, and a whole write up on it, and the dates it happened and everything. And we got to talking to one of the guys from that works, one of the ushers, because he's like, "Oh, you guys having trouble finding your seats?" And we were like, "Nope." And then we talked to him and everything, and he's like, he's a big wrestling fan. He's like, "Oh, you got to come to a house show at the Garden. If you've never been, that and it's your first time ever coming down, that's the best show to go to, you know, because you get more wrestling, you don't get any talking." So, like, he was right on, you know, right on the same level that we were with why we picked this show to go to. And then I asked him, I was like, "Do you have any of these displays out of wrestling?" And he's like, "Oh, yeah. I'm glad you asked. I wouldn't have thought to tell you, but down on the 6th floor, which is the main concourse, they have a WrestleMania 1. So we headed straight down to the 6th floor, got out there, and this is the main concourse, so there's better food options. And then all along the ceiling, all the way around, they have these like photos of an event or an incident or some sort of something that happened at the Garden. And then there's like, you know, the date and what it was. So it's like a timeline, but it's not in chronological order. It's like, so that way over the years, they go, "Well, this was a more important event, so we'll pull down this one and put this up," or whatever. So going around the top, I found 3 wrestling-related ones. It was when Hogan beat the Iron Sheik for the title. It was the first SummerSlam that took place there when Hogan and Savage against Million Dollar Man and Andre the Giant and Jesse Ventura as a referee. And they had one with Jim Londos, a match he had there. And then there was 2 others I took pictures of because I'm a big geek, and there was a roller derby one for women's roller derby match that happened there, and then Evel Knievel. So I took pictures of those, but I mean, there's all kinds of different ones, a lot of basketball, a lot of hockey, concert related ones, whatever, the Pope. And then we went to the big WrestleMania 1 display in the like little museum case, whatever you want to call it. And they got a pair of Roddy Piper's boots. They got Hogan's trunks that he wore that night there. They got just a generic Hulkamania t-shirt and a Hulkamania weight belt that he never wore till later in life, but whatever. They got a program of the show. They had like a big oversized poster of that almost like that drawing cover box of Hogan and T standing in the ring together. You know what I'm talking about?
Oh, yeah.
And then they got the description on the other side. So I took a bunch of pictures of that, and that was just really cool to see. My buddy Jay's really bad at taking pictures. He takes forever, and just, I don't know, he's just like, he doesn't know what the frig to do. And so like the pictures of me with the display, there's one where like my face is like, "You take the picture yet, dude?" And then the other one is like, my face is so dark because he didn't say, "Hey, that light's bad there, you need to move over some," or something. So whatever, it doesn't matter. So yeah, so I got the pictures of the display and everything, and then finally we went in and sat down. And I'll say this about the show: we got a pay-per-view caliber lineup of talent and house show caliber matches. But it's what I expected.
Yeah.
And when something was happening, there was a lull in the action, whatever, I just kind of look up and be like, "Holy shit, I'm at Madison Square Garden." It really doesn't matter what's happening in the ring. I'm at Madison Square Garden right now. Where I was, like, you can't bring your cameras in. My camera is considered professional because I have a nice zoom lens on it, so I can't bring it in. So I can only take pictures with my phone. So the pictures came out the way they came out. You know, they're not crystal clear, but I know that's Nakamura doing his pose. I know that's Asuka standing on the ropes, you know, shit like. And you will know, too, by looking at them. But it's just, you know, they're not crystal clear. Realistically, I got that badass picture showing the whole building that I talked about earlier and that you mentioned, and that's really all that matters to me. But I will say a few really cool things. One, Drew Gulak, that was his Madison Square Garden debut. So that's really cool. I have that little like footnote in history that I saw Gulak's debut at Madison Square Garden, because that's still a big thing. They even had a promo with him after online, him talking about, you know, his experience wrestling at Madison Square Garden for the first time. So they make a big deal out of it. So to me, it's a big deal. So that's really cool. Asuka had been advertised, and then they pulled her name from advertisement when she went showed up on SmackDown to challenge Charlotte. And so when her music hit and she came out, that got a tremendous pop, and that was cool as shit to see her entrance and to see her wrestle live and anything, because I have not seen her wrestle as Asuka live, so that was cool. I had not seen Nakamura in the WWE since he debuted there, so that was cool to see his entrance live and everything. When Brock Lesnar came out, I noted this in my blog, that was his 47th match since he returned in 2012, so he does not wrestle a lot, so to actually see him wrestle a match was pretty cool, and I got chills when he came out. I don't know what it is, I'm a you know, like, I know his matches now have come down to he throws some suplex and that's it, but I don't know, I remember what he's done in the past, and I'm like, I just want to see him kill a guy, so... You know, his music kicked on, he walked out, and I kind of got some chills, and then Paul Heyman walked out, and I was like, yes! I knew he had to be here. And, you know, him and Kane and Braun Strowman, they went a few minutes. It wasn't a 30-second match, and it wasn't, you know, a two-minute match. They went a few minutes, and there was some stairs used, and there was some chair shots, and there was some suplexes and choke slams and power slams, and... You know, in the end, an F5 put Kane down for the 3 count after Brock Lesnar took Braun Strowman out with a chair on the floor. So, yeah, I mean, I guess my only complaint is the main event was Roman Reigns against Seth Rollins Roman Reigns, Seth Rollins, and Finn Balor against Miz and the Miztourage. And it was just like, it wasn't a bad match, but it was just, you know who's going to win. So it just kind of seems, you know, like predictably redundant, so whatever. If they would have had Miztourage win, that would have popped me big time.
Yeah.
They could have done it. They could have had Miz get a roll up on Seth Rollins for a 3 count or some shit like that. And then afterwards, all the baby faces could beat the heels down with their finishers and send the crowd home happy. But yeah, there was, and then like the John Cena and Nikki Bella match again. That was another like, well, this is obvious who's winning this. This is exceptionally predictable, and the finish went exactly like I thought, with them both hitting their finishers and then the double pin, kind of the same. And you know, AJ Styles getting the beat down at the beginning, and so the dream tag match of Nakamura and Styles against Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Got turned into Nakamura against Kevin Owens, which, again, I wasn't disappointed with that match. Just love seeing him wrestle live. But the finish you knew was going to be before he hits the Kinshasa, Sami Zayn's going to clothesline him or run in and stop it or something and cause for the disqualification. And that's what happened. So some of the predictability was kind of like, whatever. But at the end of the day, I don't care. I was at Madison Square Garden.
Yeah, it sounded like you had a great time, so maybe it wasn't the best wrestling card, but it was a good time, right?
Exactly. Like, I had a great adventure. You know, everything we did, the food we had, just going down there, finally, you know, seeing that, all that stuff for the first time ever, going to Madison Square Garden, the history of the building, seeing all those displays and those historic things and reading them and seeing the timeline across the roof and just, you know, sitting at the garden, front row of the balcony on an aisle, so I had, you know, plenty of room and just experiencing that live and seeing that and listening to that crowd. It was a hot crowd. You know, it was a tremendously hot crowd. You know, Nakamura got a huge pop. AJ got a huge pop. Kevin Owens got a huge pop. Asuka did. Brock Lesnar did. Braun Strowman got a tremendously huge pop. Roman Reigns got booed out of the building. I mean, it was good. It was damn good. It was damn good. So...
Well, that's awesome. I'm glad you had a good time there.
Thank you. I made my pilgrimage to Mecca, you know?
I understand that.
And now, to me, it's almost like, shit, what's next? You know, like, we've talked about historic buildings in the past, you and I have.
We have.
And you went to, what was the venue you went to recently or a few months ago or something like that?
Dorton Arena here
Dorton
in Raleigh.
Dorton Arena, yeah, exactly, yep. Yeah. So, I mean, like, for me, it's like, all right, well, you know, the Mid-Hudson Civic Center in Poughkeepsie is still a big one. You know, they did some TV tapings there, and House of Hardcore run shows there, and I think NXT's run there before. So maybe that would be a cool venue, or, you know, so it's, I've tried to think of things like that. Like, what would be next? Would it be going, like, is there another venue I want to go to that I have to see a match at, or is there a state I want to see a match in, or now am I just going to look for certain wrestlers? I mean, obviously, there's two that are, in my opinion, unattainable. One would be Tokyo Dome, or really any show in Japan, and the other would be Arena Mexico in Mexico City.
Yeah, those would both be awesome, but yeah, a little pricey and a little more difficult.
Yeah. I guess my next big one I want to check off is just to go to a quote-unquote international show and just go to a show in Canada.
Yeah.
Which I could probably pull off. I don't live that far from Canada.
Exactly. That'd be very plausible. I have a much lower bar for me.
Yeah.
My goal in wrestling, my next thing I'm going to look out for is I want to see an actual cage match.
You've never seen a cage match live?
I saw a dark match cage match after a SmackDown that went maybe 4 minutes out of 10, 15 years ago. It was horrible. It was a waste of time. That is the only type of cage match I've ever seen live. And now I've been to shows where there's been cage match booked. Even last year's WrestleCade was supposed to have a cage match,
yep.
But it always ends up getting changed. And that's always what happens to me. It's like, oh, buy tickets. I'll finally get this to mark this off my bucket list, and then it doesn't happen. So I'm on the lookout for a cage match this year.
So do I brag right now?
Yeah, go ahead. You know, I might as well open it up because I'm sure you've seen a dozen.
Let's see here. All right, so I have seen my first ever steel cage match was at a house show in Portland, and it was the big black bars metal cage, so that's kind of cool because I was a big fan of the blue steel cage when I was a kid.
Me too. My favorite cage.
Yeah, so my first steel cage match that I saw live was in Portland, and it was – the main event was The Big Boss – not the Big Boss Man. Kane versus The Rock with the Big Boss Man as a special guest referee. And that was in the that big, thick steel cage. And then since then, I have seen – and then I went a long time without seeing a cage match. And then in 2000 – let's see here. I went to a house show in Boston, actually, at the Aegis Arena. And the reason why I went to this show is because it was February 27, 2005, is because the main event was a steel cage match pitting Batista and Randy Orton against Triple H and Nature Boy Ric Flair. And I wanted to see Ric Flair in a cage.
Oh, yeah.
You know? So we went down for that. And actually, Triple H did a book signing nearby after. That was pretty cool. But anyhow, so we went down there for that, and they all four of them got busted open. It was awesome. And Flair, and then afterwards we went and did the meet and greet with Triple H. He actually, you know, his head was all bandaged up, old school style, and it's like, that's pretty awesome. So, anyway, so there was that. And then I honestly didn't see another steel cage match in the WWE until 2012, and that was June 2012 was my son's second ever WWE show, and that was at the Civic Center in Augusta, Maine, and the main event was a steel cage match between Sheamus and Kane, which Sheamus won. He was the world champ at the time by climbing out of the cage. Also that night, we got a street fight between CM Punk and Daniel Bryan that was pretty damn awesome, which I think that's right around the same time you went to your pay-per-view.
Yeah, would have been.
Yeah. On the independent side of things, back in 2006, I went to this Big Time Wrestling had a show in Lynn. I think it was their second ever show. And the main event, they had two steel cage matches. The main event was Abyss against Samoa Joe in a cage, and that was the shits. And then the pre-main event was also in a steel cage. It was a return match, this fatal four-way elimination match featuring EC Negro against Xavier, against Jay Lethal, against Antonio Thomas. And I saw a Somerset flip powerbomb off the top of a cage through a table onto the floor.
Yeah. Dude, I just want to see a cage match, even a shitty one.
and incidentally, that was a great, like, for an independent show, that was a really good steel cage that they used that night. However, I will say, I've been to a show in Maine where they used a steel cage, where the cage was such the drizzling shits, they had to have people hold the cage side up on all four sides after they attached it together and someone took their first bump into it. Yeah, it almost collapsed. So
okay,
now you're watching
that shitty.
Now you're watching a cage match where people are holding the cage up with their hands, like around the outside of the ring while they have this match going on inside. And it was Jimmy Wang Yang against Mike Bennett. So yeah. Don't build your own steel cage, independent groups. Get one that you've seen that works really well. Buy one from High Spots, I guess, if you have to, but
Yeah,
so I have seen I've seen a couple steel cages, but I haven't seen many. I went through the same thing several years ago when I was just like, I just want to see a steel cage match, for crying out loud.
Yeah, that's where I'm on. I mean, other than, like I said, we get house shows here from the WWE right now. Yeah. You know, NXT comes through Charlotte once a year, roughly.
NXT's never been to Maine, so there you go. You got one up.
Yeah, and our independents rarely run anything with a cage, so it's just, I don't know. It'll come eventually. It's bound to. So.
I think, well, steel cages, they're not cheap, you know?
Right.
They're definitely pricey. So, yeah, here it is, November 27th, 1998, as The Rock beat Kane with the Big Boss Man as a steel cage. Yeah, November 98, that same night, Lethal Weapon Steve Blackman pinned the Blue Blazer.
Oh.
And that was the Portland Street Fight. Intercontinental Champion Ken Shamrock beat the Hardcore Champion Mankind in a hardcore match. And the hardcore title was not on the line, by the way. So, yeah.
Hmm. Yeah. That'd probably be a fun match to revisit. I always love Shamrock, so.
I was a big fan of his. Even when he stupidly took that chair shot directly to the face.
Yeah, after taking a dozen to the top of the skull.
You have to admit how foolish that was.
Yeah.
That one they show a lot when The Rock hit him, just straight on in the face.
Yep.
He's
a tough motherfucker, that's for sure.
Until I went to Ring of Honor last year, I'd seen a ladder match at an indie show, but like I hadn't seen like a big ladder match before.
Never seen one of those either.
I've
missed every gimmick match there is. Like I've seen hardly any.
You've had to see some sort of plunder matches. With like trash cans and all that shit back when they were really popular. People.
Oh, yeah. Oh, hell, even last year I watched Shane Douglas and C.W. Anderson beat the shit out of each other with a bunch of trash cans.
You seen someone use thumbtacks?
Live? I might have at the. I'm trying to remember if Genesis 2009, if Mick Foley brought some out when he was fighting.
Oh,
whoever he's fighting, but
most likely.
Yeah.
I think that's a safe bet.
Yeah, and so maybe.
I saw the I Quit match between Ric Flair and Mick Foley at SummerSlam, where they used thumbtacks and they had the barbed wire and Flair wrapped the barbed wire around his hand and chopped Foley, and that was sick.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I haven't seen a real barbed wire match, but I saw a barbed wire match at an indie show where they didn't take the ropes down and put barbed wire up, but what they did was they put like wooden slats up, like that they attached to the ring post, and they put it up like higher than the top rope, and then they strung barbed wire around those. No.
Really? I've never seen that. I've seen it wrapped around the ropes.
Nope.
Rope barbed wire, but I've never seen that.
They put like wooden slats up around from the ring post that stuck up Like they somehow like they duct tape them to the ring post or some shit, one on each side, and it's stuck up like 2 feet taller than the ropes themselves. All right, then they wrapped barbed wire, like a couple loops of it, or lengths of it, if you will, around the wooden slats all the way around the ring, so the wrestlers, like, basically the barbed wire can only touch them in the face or the back of the head because of the height it was safe. At.
And it's a barbed wire match that nobody wants.
And you couldn't whip anyone into the ropes because they, you know, they'd hit the barbed wire with their head, with their face and head.
Yeah. Wow.
Yeah. I have seen a couple. I've seen a few matches where they use the light tubes. Those are guaranteed bloody. But I mean, hey, I've never seen a match with explosions or fireworks.
Well, there you go. See, finally, something we both haven't seen.
Yeah. I haven't seen a matches that have explosions or fireworks. But maybe someday. I wouldn't mind seeing a big, good old-fashioned strap match, though, like where they have the strap connecting the guys.
Oh, yeah. Those were always great.
I mean, did you ever see a Russian chain match?
Yeah.
I thought you did. I thought you did with Cole. Wasn't it with Ivan Koloff?
Oh, sorry, that's the one. I never saw one live, no.
Oh, I meant live. No. I'm talking live. I've seen all that stuff on TV.
Yeah.
I've seen explosion matches on TV, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah, no, I never saw one live. They were they usually would do stuff like that at the Ivan Koloff tag team tournament. Yeah. Then when he passed away last year when I went, they didn't end up doing anything.
Okay.
So.
Yeah, I mean, I remember watching Mr. Gonosuke against H in the anal bomb explosion match where you won by pulling your opponent's pants down and sticking a giant bottle rocket in there. But and then lighting it off, and then
I've seen highlights of that. It's interesting.
It's odd. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little bit. It's a flavor of wrestling that not everyone is for.
I've kind of lost my interest in that stuff. I used to love it back in the day.
Yeah. But, well,
you know, when it was cool to like it. Now it's just like, I'd just rather watch two guys beat the shit out of each other.
I just remember watching like some FMW stuff where like you have like the floating ring match where the guys have to take a boat to get to the ring.
Yeah.
And, you know, every time someone gets thrown off and they go into the water, like fireworks goes off like.
Exactly.
Like, just some crazy shit like that. But no, you're right. For me, like right now, I'm all about New Japan Pro Wrestling, and I just finished watching the entire New Japan Cup. All what was it? 8 nights, 9 nights. That was each night was like a good 2.5 hour to 3 hour card. Each card, and then each show had like 2 tournament cup matches in it, and then came down to. Then they did three card. The last 3 shows had each one semifinal match and then the finals match. And if you were just to watch the tournament matches alone, I mean, you're treated to some damn good wrestling. But I really enjoyed watching the entirety of the shows, seeing all the different tag team and you know 6-man tag matches and everything like that, and watching the storylines build as they go. But are you familiar with the results?
I actually haven't really browsed them. I'm kind of out of the loop on that.
All right. Well, I'll just spoil them for you.
Go for it.
Zack Sabre Jr. became the man in this tournament. I mean, he opened the tournament by submitting Naito, which is huge.
Yeah.
And my favorite is in the post-match interviews because Naito is always talking about being tranquilo, you know, being, you know, cool and calm. And Zack Sabre's like, who's tranquilo now, dickhead? He's just full on heel. Second match, he submitted Frigg. I can't remember now, which is so sad. It doesn't matter. He submitted everybody. He beat Naito, and then it wasn't Ishii. I'm gonna have to look it up, or else it's gonna bother me. And then I know he wrestled in his third match. He referee stoppage Sonata. The ref stopped the match because he had Sonata in a submission hold. And then the finals, he wrestled Tanahashi. And they went a good, 30 minutes, I bet. And let's see here. I'm right there now. 2018. Oh, Kota Ibushi. That's what it was. He got a referee stoppage on Kota Ibushi. And then he submitted Sonata. And in the finals against Hiroshi Tanahashi, they went 34 minutes. And he submitted. He made Tanahashi tap out. Which is crazy. Because when Tanahashi recently wrestled at the end of January at the New Beginning when he wrestled Minoru Suzuki, he refused to tap out to Suzuki and Red Shoe stopped the match, and that's how Suzuki won the title from Tanahashi, and Tanahashi got stretchered out of the ring after. And this match here, he slapped his finish on him, which, have you heard what he's calling his finisher now?
No, I don't think so.
Oh, God, it's hilarious. Well, I'm not, it's hilarious. But anyways, it's called, where is it? Something to do with napalm. He's got so many finishers, they don't even have them all in here. That is hilarious. Like when I'm looking on here on Wikipedia, because his finishing move, he's got a European clutch. Hurry, another year, sure this will be better than the last. The inexorable march progress will lead us to all happiness, which is a double wrist clutch. Octopus hold. Gym break special. Oh, the orienteering with napalm death. That's what it's called.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
He basically somehow hooks up a guy's leg, and then the guy goes to kick him with the other leg, so he slaps on like a stretch muffler, and then does like a banana split with their legs. I mean, it's just, it's impressive to look at. And he calls, like I said, orienteering with napalm death. And he submitted Tanahashi, which is huge. I'm sitting here on my couch, 4:30 in the morning, watching this match, and when Tanahashi tapped out, I'm like, holy shit, I have no one to share this with. Everyone's asleep like they should be. I can't even go on Facebook and type and post about it, because I'm gonna put a spoiler up there for someone, and that's a dick move, and I don't want to do that. So I was beside myself, but it was pretty fantastic. Tanahashi didn't have himself an easy ride either getting there. You know, he defeated Tai Chi in the opening round. Second round, he beat Bad Luck Fale by count out. In the third round, him and Juice Robinson had a fantastic 30-minute match. I mean, it was very, very impressive. And then, you know, in the finals, he lost to Sabre Jr. So my pick to win the tournament this year was Sonata, which he made it to the third round. So I feel good about that. But yeah, I mean, holy crap! What a tournament! What a week of shows!
Yeah, that's a lot of wrestling.
It's not. I don't think you can ever quantify wrestling in a lot as the same category. In my opinion, but I'm odd.
You are a little odd, but that's a lot of wrestling to watch. Hey, I'm in awe. That's fantastic, and it's great that New Japan is continuing to just. I mean, yeah. Hit it out of the park every time they come out, it seems.
I mean, I paid for New Japan World this month. I paid the exchange rate. It was $9.72 American. I've already gotten 11 shows from them this month, and there's still two more. There's the next week. There's the show on Monday. Or yeah, I believe it's Monday. Maybe it's Tuesday. The 26th, the Strong Style Evolved in the U.S., yeah, it's next Monday night. That will not air live on New Japan World because I believe it's airing live on Access TV, which I do not get. But as soon as the event is over, it'll be on New Japan World. So I'll watch that next Monday night while I'm at work, probably. So I'm going to have to avoid the internet. And then on March 30th, there's another show. And it's Road to Sakura Generous. Sakura Genesis. Jason Crow, which that is April 1st, and that is their next big show. And again, like, because of my work, where I work as a dispatcher and everything, I have the luxury of being able to have my tablet with me, which I can queue up New Japan World at 4:30 in the morning, or 2 in the morning, or 4 in the morning, or 3, or whenever it's on live, and partake in it. So, yay for me. But there's a couple things that I do want to check out, like WXW just had their 16-man tournament, and they do a 16-woman tournament, and it's like it's 3 days, and I think it's $11 for a month of WXW on demand. So I'd like to get that to watch those shows. And then in May, of course, we have the Super Strong 16 from Progress, which I don't want to miss that either. I don't. There's too much good wrestling. And luckily, with all these on-demand and streaming services, we can partake in it. I mean, like you just say, you just got yourself a month of Global Force.
Yep.
Have you watched anything yet?
Yeah, actually, I have it on right now. I have on Lockdown, or no, Final Resolution 2009.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's I was actually going to talk about that a little bit.
Please do.
I was excited because I'm on vacation, and I was like, you know what I really feel like watching? I really feel like binging a ton of Impact from, say, 2009, 2010. Yeah. You know, their heyday, in my opinion.
Absolutely.
So I probably should have done my research ahead of time because they don't have any of those Impacts on their app yet. So,
geez. What do they have?
So they have like 2004, 2005, and I think that's it when they start off early. And then they've got like everything from, you know, let me tell you exactly here so I'm not lying for anybody who might want to actually sign up for this. They have the last few years are pretty much all on there. So they have 2004, 2005, and then they have 2015 through 2 weeks ago, basically. They're only 2 weeks behind. So that's kind of cool. All the pay-per-views are on there, along with most of the DVDs.
What about when it comes to pay-per-views, like the first weekly pay-per-views they were doing?
The early days, the Asylum years, it looks like they've got, I would say, most of them. I would say they got pretty much, yeah, they start with the first one and it goes all the way through show 101, which was middle of 2004, and then they've got Impact starting in 2004. So most of the early Asylum days, like I said, all the pay-per-views, British boot camps, all that type of stuff. But the specific years I was looking for are not on there. So that kind of sucked. Also, I was excited to see the indies on there because they've got a lot of indies.
Really?
Which I think is a great way. Yeah. AML here in North Carolina is on there. WrestleCade's on there. Border City Wrestling, Smash, WrestlePro, Rise, and a few others. I was really excited about checking all that out, also for $8 or the free 1 month free trial.
Yeah.
However, with exception of, I believe, Smash, all of the stuff is extremely outdated.
Okay.
Smash is a week old. It's that up to date. But, I mean, AML is like the middle of last year, and they run monthly shows.
Yeah.
I don't even think they have last year's WrestleCade on there. You know, it's hard not to recommend it if you're wanting to watch pay-per-views and stuff like that. But
yeah.
if you go for the indie wrestling or for some specific Impacts, you're going to be sorely disappointed, like I was.
Well, yeah, because actually what I would want to watch for Impacts, for me, would consist of when Flair was there.
Right.
I want to watch, like, I really want to watch Flair's final match, which was him against Sting on Impact. So I would like to see those. So I'll have to find the specific date here and ask you if it's on there, because I think I think you'll be able to help me with that.
I will.
But yeah.
I'm going to say probably not. I mean, one cool thing they did do is, and it looks like they're touching on some curating, like kind of like the WWE Network has, where it's like, oh, here's the best matches of this or that. They actually have a hidden gems section.
Nice.
Which has matches you probably didn't know happened, like Nakamura versus Elex Skipper, or
really?
The Hot Shots versus the Briscoes, which I had no clue they ever wrestled in TNA.
Yeah. They probably have Flair's, CM Punk's TNA stuff is probably on there.
It might be. I know they got Tanahashi versus Roderick Strong.
Yeah.
And even some more recently, Will Ospreay and Matt Hardy versus Eli Drake and James Storm.
Yeah.
There's some cool stuff. You can see that they're working their way. It kind of guess feels like real Impact right now. They're in the middle. The one thing though that bothers the hell out of me is they have a coming soon section, and they misspelled coming, and it drives me freaking nuts.
How'd they spell it?
COMMING.
Oh, that's so bad.
And I'm like, did you guys like contract this out to you know, who to make this, you know. So.
Do they have the episode of Impact on there from September 12th, 2011?
They do not. Okay. That's part of the missing years right now. Okay. So
yeah, that's Sting versus Ric Flair and Ric Flair's official last match ever. So
yeah, so hopefully that'll be soon. The one thing I'm most excited for to get in here is I went to one TNA pay-per-view. I went to Genesis 2009 and you know, had a lot of fun. It was a great show. But it was in that weird time when TNA wasn't selling individual DVDs of their pay-per-view. They were selling box sets with three discs.
Okay,
and it was called like Cross the Line Volume 1 and Cross the Line Volume 2. And I want to say they retailed for 40 or 50. And I just couldn't pay that to buy three discs, two of which I didn't care about.
Right.
And over the last 10 years, pretty much since that happened, or 9 years, I've checked eBay and I have bid it on that set, oh, I don't even know, 20 or 30 times trying to buy it, but it always goes way outside of my range. So this will be my first chance to actually get to revisit that and see the pay-per-view, you know, from the television perspective, you know, which I didn't get a chance to see.
Yeah, right. Oh yeah, TNA Genesis 2009, there's someone selling it on eBay right now for $25.
Yeah, see, that's just so hard.
That is... Yeah, that's a tough one. That'd be a tough one to drop money on. No, I made it to two TNA shows. They were both house shows. One was in the Hampton Beach Casino Ballroom in New Hampshire, and they were using the six-sided ring then, but it was not a full-size ring. It was such a small wrestling ring. It was literally like hit the ropes, take two steps, and hit the ropes. I mean, it was crazy how kind of small this ring was for this house show in Hampton Beach. And, I mean, I could look the results up, but it was a decent show. It was a solid show. And then a couple years later, they came to the only show they've ever done in Maine at the Cumberland County Civic Center, and we had second row on the aisle for that one, lucky on the aisle. And that was a great show. I mean, we got AJ Styles defending the title in the main event against Christopher Daniels. We got Kurt Angle against Nigel McGuinness, or Desmond Wolfe at the time. That was a really good show. That was a great show. And but the attendance was like 1,000 people, you know, unfortunately. So, but yeah, never made it to a TNA taping or pay-per-view or anything.
Yeah, I got to go to one other show. It was in March of 2011. I went to see them. They came to Fayetteville, North Carolina, and taped Impact.
Yep.
And
oh, that's cool.
Yeah, it was exciting because it was my first and only time I ever got to see Hulk Hogan live. Never got a chance to see him anywhere else. And what that show is, I guess, memorable for was that was the time when it was rumored that Sting might be the Undertaker's mystery opponent for WrestleMania.
Yes.
And it was like almost a done deal, and then I guess it all fell through. And so TNA decided to do this countdown for the date. And I can't remember the exact date because this was obviously taping, but whenever it aired, and they kept putting that date and doing a countdown over the weeks. And so everybody...
that.
Yeah, everyone was pretty sure it was Sting, but, you know, you weren't 100%. And so we're sitting there waiting for the show to start, and that countdown comes up. And I'm like, okay, please be Sting, because I'd never seen Sting live, and I'm a huge, huge Sting fan.
Oh, that's
and
awesome.
And he debuts, comes out, challenges Jeff Hardy for the TNA World title, wins the title. And I'm like, oh, my God. So I got to see Sting wrestle and win the world
that's
title.
Awesome.
I'm like, this is great. So yeah, that was a very memorable time, and it was a good show. I had a lot of fun. I really liked, you know, I don't know, even those first few months with Hogan took over, TNA was still pretty decent. And
did Hogan wrestle that night?
He did not. He just came out and cut a promo, so I never got a chance to see him wrestle.
Well, I'm gonna be that guy because we're talking wrestling. I have been fortunate enough to see Hogan wrestle a couple of times, back in '89 in Portland against Macho Man Randy Savage, and Savage beat him by count out. And then I saw him at Backlash 2005 when he teamed up with Shawn Michaels against Muhammad Hassan and Daivari. And then at 2006 at SummerSlam when he beat Randy Orton. And then, yeah. Oh, you know what? I also saw him at WCW Nitro. He submitted to the torture rack to Lex Luger. It was not when Luger won the belt. It was the match that got Luger the title shot a couple weeks later. So, but I've only ever seen Sting rappel down out of the rafters, hook up to DDP, and shoot back up. I've never seen Sting wrestle in person.
I got one on you there.
Yeah. Oh, no, you probably got way more than that, sir. If we were to really break down all the shows we've been to and who we've seen wrestle live and who we haven't seen wrestle live, based on your location alone, there's probably a lot of names that I'm very jealous about. Like, I'll just start out with the Rock and Roll Express.
Who I've seen wrestle, gosh, 3 or 4 times now.
Now, technically, I saw the Rock and Roll Express in the Battle Royal at WrestleMania 14. That doesn't count. My opinion. Jerry Lawler, I saw him wrestle Kamala at a big time wrestling show in a lumberjack match. Not the best match. Because it was Kamala.
Yeah.
You've seen Lawler wrestle a bunch of times, haven't you?
Oh, God, yeah. Especially when I'm living in Memphis. You know, he usually would get a match on Raw or whatever we would go to, and if it wasn't aired, at least it was a dark match. Like it was no matter what, you know, Lawler's wrestling. And I mean, I saw him just this past August tagging up with the Rock and Roll, or was he with the Rock and Roll? No, he was facing off against Terry Funk in the Rock and Roll Express, and then I saw him in November back again at WrestleCade. I do have a weird wrestling thing that I'm sure I beat you on. I don't know how jealous you're going to be, though. So if you are jealous, I want you to keep it calm, okay? I don't want you to freak out.
All right.
So at that TNA show I went to, I got to see JWoww of the Jersey Shore. Okay? I know that's pretty hot shit.
Yeah.
That was in March. The next month in April, I went to WrestleMania, and I got to see Snooki.
Holy shit.
I have seen two Jersey Shore cast members in wrestling rings. I'm just saying.
Well, you have won the victory of seeing cast members from the Jersey Shore, not only in person, but in wrestling.
Yes.
So that
within
one.
Within like 30 days of each other.
Yes. I'll say this. Snooki surprised me with her tumbling routine she did. So,
I think she surprised everybody. I mean, it's sad when you look back at that WrestleMania I went to, and that was one of the highlights of it. I was like, damn, Snooki was pretty good. And the rest of the show felt so fucking mad. Honestly, I can't even remember. I mean, God, that show was so bad.
Do you have a list of your results of the shows you've been to?
I have a pretty complete list. Not easily accessible, but I have it backed up on a drive.
Mine's on my Google Drive, so I can update it no matter where I am.
Yeah, I really need to put it together. I have a process, and I want to do a series of blogs on the WrestlingInsomniac.com.
Yep.
I would like to revisit all the shows I've gone to via the network and whatever else and review them and then tag in with thoughts that I had from them. I mean, obviously, stuff from the 90s, I'm not going to remember a ton.
Yep.
But, like, I remember one of the shows in Dallas I went to. I believe it was a Raw. Edge and Christian got chokeslammed by Kane, and he poured gasoline on him and was fixing to light him on fire. And I remember it was crazy because they actually poured gasoline because you could smell it throughout the arena. And it was just like, oh, my God. Like, this is nuts.
That's actual gas. Yeah.
I was there for the debut of the Job Squad on Sunday Night Heat.
Nice.
So, I think it'll be fun. I actually ordered the two Dragon Gate USA DVDs. Shows I went to back in 2011. I ordered them recently because they were clearancing them out because I think they're getting rid of all that stuff.
Yep.
And it was like $5 a disc. I was like, okay, I need to get these on, you know, get these here and set them up for review. And so,
Have you looked at the Shop TNA website to see if the Genesis 2009 is on the cheap there?
Not recently. Last I had looked, it wasn't even on there anymore.
Okay. I used to try to – I mean, if any pay-per-view I've been to, I have a DVD copy of it. You know, like I definitely – so like if I could go grab off my shelf, you know, like DVD copies of all the WWE pay-per-views I've been to, or the two Ring of Honor shows I went to, or I have DVD copies of the Chikara shows I went to. I don't have the most recent one because it was a real shit show. And it really wasn't very good. I've been to three Chikara shows. The first one ever was Joshi Mania back in 2011. I think it was 10 or 11. They did a three nights, Philadelphia, New York, and outside Boston. And so it was when they brought in all kinds of Japanese women talent, like Aja Kong, Mayu Miyazaki. I could just name a bunch of names, but people may or may not know them. So I went to that. That was pretty awesome. Like, that to me was definitely a once-in-a-lifetime show for me to see that Japanese talent in person. So that was super cool. And then I went to the first time they ever came to Maine was in 2012 at the Strive Center. And it was July of that year. The main event was Sarah Del Rey against Eddie Kingston for the Chikara Grand Championship. And that Strive Center was packed with 400-plus people, standing room. It was 115 degrees in there. It was so sweltering hot. And Kingston and Sarah Del Rey, they went close to 30 minutes in a match where I swear to God more than once, I fully believe Sarah Del Rey was going to win the title. Even though all the rumors of her signing with WWE to go down to work in the developmental and become a coach and everything were out there, I'm like, but they got to give it to her before she goes because, you know, she's, you know. So I'm very glad I got to see that because she only wrestled a couple more matches after that. It's actually that match is what inspired my column on the Wrestling Insomniac, the last match, because I was like, well, did I see her last match ever? And I didn't, but that's what led me to wondering about a bunch of different wrestlers and their last matches and whatnot. So anyhow, that was a fantastic card. The Young Bucks were on it. The Heartthrobs. There was a lot of great talent on that show. And then I went to one last year in Kennebunk, their return to Maine. And it was just meh.
Yeah, I missed both the shows. Well, they taped two back and back last year. I was really hoping to go this year, but I don't know if you've looked. They're not leaving Pennsylvania this year.
Yeah, pretty much I saw that. They came back to Kennebunk in November. And just based on the March show, it's like I'm not going out of my way to go down to see that show. I got tickets to Elton John the next night. I was just, nah. And my buddy Mikey went, and he was just like, yeah, it wasn't worth it. Just, it's not the same like it was. Like, the shows they did after that, like the following night and the night after that in other states, like they did a show like in Connecticut and Rhode Island or some shit like that, and in Massachusetts, and they had a much higher caliber of talent. It's like we got the C show.
Oh,
you know
okay.
What I mean? Like,
yeah.
The only thing cool is like I got to see Dixon Line, but they were as Des Politan. So,
right.
You know, but you know, we didn't get Quackenbush on the show. They had Quackenbush wrestle the next night, like in Mass, and it's like, why the fuck can't we get Quackenbush? They didn't even have the Grand Champion on the show. You know, they had the tag titles, and you know, the only thing cool is I got to meet Chuck Taylor. Not finally, because I'd met him back at the Joshi Mania show, but I got to see Chuck Taylor get some Chuck Taylor cards signed and everything. Otherwise, I mean, it wasn't a bad time. The kids had a great time, but it wasn't worth going out of the way to go to a show at 7 o'clock at night in Kennebunk. It's like over an hour drive for that. So, but yeah, I noticed this year everything's in Pennsylvania. So I've heard it's a cost cutting measure.
Yeah. I guess they're putting on subpar shows here and there, and that's what happens. Word gets around.
What do you think about Kimberly getting released?
A little shocking, I guess, but I don't know.
See, to me, between Kimberly and Heidi Lovelace, Kimberly was the better wrestler, in my opinion.
Yeah, and I agree with that.
And to see that, you know, Ruby Riott's up on the main squad, and Kimberly's released and was basically never used except for a couple of matches and then the Mae Young Classic and everything. It really surprised me. I was quite shocked, actually.
Yeah, I kind of feel like when they do these tournaments and stuff, though, they end up offering out contracts and with no real intention on using these people much. I mean, it just kind of feels like this happened a few times now, and I mean, you've seen people that's actually asked for their release from NXT, like Sammy Callahan and stuff like that. Just don't feel like they're being used. I almost wonder if they're just, I don't know, they have no plan. They're like, okay, let's just get this talent under contract and then let's try to figure out something for them.
Hell, did you hear Sammy Callahan's on Talk Is Jericho?
I have not, no.
Oh my gosh, that you need to listen to that. First of all, in my opinion, he was completely in character the whole time.
Oh really?
Oh yeah. And it was a I don't give a fuck character, and it all stemmed from him hitting Eddie Edwards in the face by accident, which he says was by accident with the baseball bat.
Yeah.
And why he's not apologizing for it, and why he doesn't think he needs to apologize for it. It's pretty awesome. It's an hour of just him being furious and some awkwardness and Jericho like not being the normal like kind of like loud mouth and braggadocious Chris Jericho. I mean, he's like you got to listen to it. It's really it's well worth listening to. And then the way it ends, I'm just like, this feels like this is a work. Like when he had Matt Hardy on in character as broken Matt Hardy for the whole episode or whatever. It's like, it feels like it's kind of work because I don't see Callahan being disrespectful like that and just walking off like he did. But at the same time, I don't really give a shit. It was awesome.
Yeah. If Impact is doing anything right, it was that angle. I mean, because everybody at least watched the YouTube clip to see how bad that eye injury was. And
oh, yeah.
I feel like the tides are turning slightly for them. I am interested in seeing where this next set of TV tapings is going. You know, I guess I was looking actually earlier tonight. I guess April 27th, I think, is the pay-per-view. Yeah. And then the next night they start taping. So that's the only bad thing about them is, I mean, your main event of that pay-per-view is Alberto Del Rio versus Austin Aries. And I don't give a fuck. You know,
well,
I guess
it's only word that Del Rio's going to be out of his contract after that pay-per-view.
And I hope so.
And there's a possibility of him coming back to WWE.
Good. I don't watch much WWE, so go ahead. Yeah. That would please me. And the one thing I will say, I was actually watching the highlights of Impact tonight as well. Before that, that's actually what got me thinking, because I wanted to see Sue Young's debut.
Yep.
She shows up a lot around here in Queens of Combat and stuff. So, they have got to do something about that damn crowd. I mean, it is terrible. And it's been terrible for years. I was tweeting earlier this week about watching Rob Van Dam versus Jerry Lynn. And the crowd in the Impact Zone fucking sucks. And watching her debut tonight, now I know they tape a lot, and so obviously fatigue factors in some, but nobody fucking cared. Like, nobody cares. You can tell they're not wrestling fans.
I think when you tape, like we were talking about earlier, you know, like a five-hour show, it's a long time, you know? And I've been to some Limitless shows where I'm watching the main event, and I know I'm watching a damn good match. I'm exhausted from the first half of the show. But you're right. The Impact crowds, I mean, they used to be something special, but I think they feel cheated because they've taken the pay-per-views out of the Impact Zone. They've taken TV tapings out of the Impact Zone, and I think you have some regulars that feel cheated, so they're just gonna shit on everything. And then, like you said, you have others that's like, I'm at the theme park. Hey, let's go watch wrestling.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, and there's even stuff. I mean that. Impact or TNA did back in the day. Like, I remember a few years ago, they made a big announcement before that this is TV and you don't need to boo these people. And, you know, they try to control the crowd. I mean, they've done so much wrong, you know, over the years. It's just like, I can see your booking maybe getting better here. And I see, like, things are getting better that way. But your commentary still has a shit ton of room for improvement. And so does your crowd. Yeah. I mean, move into a much smaller venue. Stop trying to pretend like you're big league on this. Move it into a 500-seat venue somewhere with actual wrestling fans and give them some damn good wrestling, and I can see that thing growing huge.
But, you know, it's funny. You know, when Impact started, they started slow. They built big. They got huge. And I thought the product was fantastic. I thought it was a great alternative to WWE. And then they signed Hulk Hogan and Eric Bischoff. And I'm not going to say they ruined Impact. They ruined Impact.
Yes, they did.
And for me, it hasn't. They haven't pulled their, they haven't come up from under the water since. That was 7 years ago. Harsh, maybe, whatever. They tried going back to the six-sided ring and try to go back to the way things were, but then you had all the bullshit with Dixie, and then Flair, Jarrett comes in, and then Jarrett's gone, and then Billy Corgan's gonna run things, and then Billy Corgan's not gonna run things, and then Anthem buys them out. But then again, they're doing a TV taping in March for shit that's airing in June, and it's like, why do we even care? You know, if yeah. you go look at their title lineages on their history on their pages, it's like, this person actually had a one-day title reign, but because of where it aired on TV, it's 212 days. You know, like...
That's kind of what blew my mind, because I remember when they said this, Su Young debuted, you know, looking at the taping things, I'm like, God, that was months ago.
Yeah.
I'm like, are they seriously not through these tapings yet? And that's why I was looking up dates, and I'm like, no. And it's like, oh, they tape April 28th or whatever to build up for their July pay-per-view.
Yeah, they taped in January for shit we're seeing now that's going to be going up and through April.
I mean, EC3 just got fired tonight.
Yeah, from the Feast.
I mean, that's...
He's already debuted on NXT TV. You know, at the live takeover in January, he was there, you know, in the crowd. And then we've seen him on TV since then, and he's booked in a match at Takeover in April. I mean, yeah. I mean, technically, if you look at the Hardy Boys, they were still on TV. They were the TNA Tag Team Champions after they left the company and were wrestling with Ring of Honor as their tag champs. But because the matches hadn't aired on TV yet, they were still the tag champs, even though they weren't even in the company anymore.
Yeah.
You know?
Something's got to work different
you
about that.
Like, I respect what Don Callis and Scott D'Amore are trying to do. They have a lot ahead of them. They've only had the one TV taping. You know, they're going to have this next pay-per-view come out. This pay-per-view here in April is really going to be, you know, make or break for them, I think. And unfortunately, I don't think they have the talent on it that they need, because I remember, like, all right, so what was it back? I don't know when it was, but they did the barbed wire massacre match, and they couldn't put it on Spike TV or whatever, on Pop TV, so they put it on Twitch for free.
Yeah.
I watched it on Twitch. I think I told you my comments on that.
Yeah, I watched it too.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was the first time I felt betrayed, because I believe in Don Callis, but I'm like, okay, you're telling me things are getting better.
That wasn't them, though. That
was it before he came in?
That was from the previous set of tapings under the old regime, if you will. But man, you have a barbed wire match where no one's bleeding?
Yeah. Yeah, meanwhile, I'm watching, you know, a cage match with Mick Foley and Desmond Wolfe, and there's fucking blood everywhere. I mean, just
awesome.
Yeah, and a fantastic match.
Yeah, but yeah, you have a barbed wire massacre match where no one's bleeding. You have people like, and again, the audio is so screwed up on it, you can't really hear the bumps in the ring. The commentators are too loud. I mean, like, and then they, right after that, they like popped up the Bound for Glory pay-per-view from last November. And I was shit, I'll watch this. Oh my God, was it bad.
Yeah.
Like, not even like, that was a little rough. No, this was horrendously abysmal, terrible. Like, I can't think of enough, you know, adjectives to describe how horribly bad it was. So, you know, it's... TNA's got a long way to go, still. I guess we'll see what's happening. For me right now, though, worldwide, I think New Japan's the number one country, putting out high-quality wrestling. Secondary for me that I watch on the regular would be NXT. And then I don't know after that, because there's too many companies like in Great Britain that are putting on good matches.
Yeah.
maybe I guess Ring of Honor. Yeah.
This is going to sound weird, and this is why I don't watch NXT as regular as I used to, because NXT used to be a no miss for me, and it is the perfect set, the perfect way I want a wrestling organization ran, which is a 1 hour show every week building up to a pay per view that I can afford. Because even if I don't watch it live on the network, it's on Hulu the next day. I mean, it's everything I could possibly want. But I get emotionally invested in the characters. I enjoy watching their success, their fantastic matches, and all that. And then I watch them progress into shit.
Oh, and I watched them called up, you mean?
Yeah. It's like it's like watching your favorite, you know, baseball player in the minor leagues, and you're like, God, this guy's got talent. This guy's got talent. And then you watch him get to the majors, and it's like, oh, okay, so we're just gonna shit all over him now. You know, and that's kind of the way I feel. I mean,
Ty Dillinger?
It's prime example.
I mean, his end of run in NXT, he was a top guy. He could have been NXT champ. He was having fantastic matches. He was so over with the crowd. People were behind him. He made his debut at the Royal Rumble. People were like, oh my God, and he's number 10. 1 year later, jobbing out to Baron Corbin in 3 minutes on SmackDown. That's his, you know, that he won't have another TV match for another 6 months.
No. I mean, the Revival. I mean,
don't get me started on the greatest tag team in wrestling right now, in my opinion.
Exactly. There was the excitement level I got when the Revival would actually have a match on NXT. I mean, probably was the closest I came to popping out like I did in the 90s, where I was like, "Oh my God, the Revival are on tonight. This is going to be great." Excited.
Their tag team matches with DIY, with Gable and Jordan. I mean, fucking just
off the charts.
Amazing tag team matches. Yeah, absolutely amazing tag team matches. And just watching them still. And, oh, no, they're on the 25th anniversary of Raw, losing in 3 minutes or 30 seconds or whatever it is to Gallows and Anderson, and then getting beat up by DX and the Bullet Club and NWO and whoever else you want to call them. You know, against the Bar. Like, oh, we've beaten everybody. Oh, we haven't rushed the Revival. Oh, we'll beat you in 7 minutes then. And now what's going to happen? Oh, they're going to feud with Braun Strowman, which I like Braun Strowman. He's a singles wrestler. It should be Braun Strowman against Brock for the title. Braun should win the title. Roman Reigns should just go fucking – just go to – I don't care. Just not be on my TV. Roman Reigns makes me not want to watch the product. And the idea that he's going to win the title, the Universal Championship at WrestleMania, makes me not want to watch Raw even more whenever there's a chance he's going to be on.
Yeah.
So anyways, yeah, the Revival, yeah, I know, that is frustrating. That is.
But that's my biggest problem, and that's why I don't watch NXT as regularly as I used to, because I feel like I'm investing a lot of time. I mean, it's like watching a TV show, knowing the final season is going to suck balls. It's just like, all right, you know, this is the time when they're supposed to move up and be great, and instead they're not even going to get a chance.
I've been getting like that with TV shows lately, and it makes me not want to watch them. Like, for instance, on The Flash, Barry goes to jail. I understand it's part of the comic book storyline, but Barry's not going to jail for any length of time. This is stupid. Or Barry loses his super speed from the Speed Force. Yeah, that's not going to happen in length of time. Oh, Barry gets sucked into the Speed Force at the season finale. Don't worry. In the first episode next season, he'll be pulled out. Like, because he's the star of the damn show. So, I still like The Flash, but, like, I'm frustrated with TV storylines like that because I think they're stupid and useless and pointless. And I'm fed up with it. And it's tried and true, old fashioned. This is what we're gonna do for TV or storylines, and we got 23 episodes we gotta do. So we gotta have some junk in there somewhere. But I kind of feel the same way, like you do, about watching your favorite NXT talent rise and blossom to be shit on when they hit the main roster because they gotta prove themselves again. I'm the only one that hasn't had to is Asuka. So
yeah,
yeah. But I don't know. I still like NXT because they've had Pete Dunne on a lot lately, and I'm a big fan of Pete Dunne, and his matches have just been great. And you know, I still watch NXT because I want to follow the storylines going into TakeOver. Because at this point right now, I'm probably more excited about TakeOver than I am WrestleMania. I'm still excited about WrestleMania. It's a tradition. I'll be making a big sandwich that day. I'll be sitting around being all fat, dumb, lazy, and happy watching wrestling all day. So hopefully, you know, but I'm excited about TakeOver.
Yeah.
More so.
Yeah, which will be good. There should be a lot of great shows WrestleMania weekend. Yeah. That's something, I mean, I'm excited about.
WrestleMania is coming to New York, New Jersey next year again. And there's a part of me that wants to go. But actually, it's not to go for WrestleMania. It's to go for WrestleCon, Joey Janela's Spring Break. I mean, you know, the everything else that's not WrestleMania related is kind of was like, oh, I'd love to go watch all, like, go down there to see all these indie shows and all these indie guys, and because Progress will come over again to watch Progress shows. I mean, look what they're doing in New Orleans. They have Impact versus Lucha Underground is having a show,
which is pretty amazing. It's pretty awesome. It's
very amazing. I mean, they got, like, you know, and apparently Pentagon Jr. and Phoenix have patched up tidings with Lucha Underground because they're going to be on the show.
Unless, yeah, course, in the main event.
Yeah. You know, you got Progress is coming over from the UK with their talent to run shows. Shimmer's running shows there. Joey Janela's Spring Break, which I can't wait for that. That looks absolutely phenomenal so far. Have you been watching those promo packages they're putting out for Joey Janela's Spring Break?
Yeah, they're great. Right.
Every Monday night he puts a new one out. They're spectacular.
You got Cody versus Omega.
Yeah, Cody and Omega for Supercard of Honor. You know, I mean, like, there's so much great wrestling that's going to be going on. I almost want to go next year to go to all the indie shows that are going to be happening.
You know, if it was close by and I could go, you know, based off my past WrestleMania experience, I would almost go for the indie shows and yep. Access, because I had a blast at Access, and then just skip WrestleMania. that sounds fucked up, but that's true.
I've been to two WrestleManias, and they've never had an Access. I went to WrestleMania 14. They didn't do it that year. They did it, like, the year before and the year after. But it wasn't the same as, like, what it is now. And then when I went to WrestleMania 24, they didn't do a traditional Access that year either. They had done one, like, 4 years prior to that. Like, from WrestleMania 24, they had done them. But they didn't do one that year, and then they brought it back the next year. They had a thing where they had a meet and greet at Universal Studios where you could go stand in line for hours to meet, like, Victoria and the Dudley Boys and this and that. But they didn't have a traditional, like, Access. So I've never been to Access. And back when I went to WrestleMania 24, they weren't doing all those indie shows at that time. Like, you know, Ring of Honor wasn't coming to town and on and on and on. But I did try to go to Impact because Impact ran a bunch of shows at Universal Studios in Orlando that week, TV tapings, and WWE gave everybody who bought a WWE package, like I did, to a pass to Universal Studios. So I'm like, cool, WWE's going to pay for me to go watch Impact. The line was so big, it, like, wasn't worth standing in line and waiting for because I knew I was never getting in.
Yeah, I can understand that. Yeah.
We did find an independent show, though. I say we. I did all the legwork, because I always do. I did find an independent show that was, like, 11 a.m. on Saturday morning at the Orlando Fairgrounds. And it was, like, a three-hour show. And, like, Jake the Snake Roberts was on it. I got an awesome picture with Jake because he's sitting down, luckily, and so you can't see how out of shape he was in it. But this is before, like, he had long hair. He had his long hair still, and he still had a good look in his face, you know, but his body was a little rough. Abdul the Butcher was in the main event. I saw the Heartbreak Express against Bruce Santee and Phil Davis in a 2 out of 3 falls. Like, the first match was a was a double dog collar match. The second match was like a barbed wire bat thumbtack match, and then the third match was a fuck anything goes, and that's they used light tubes and all kinds of shit. There was a bunch of guys I never heard on the show. There's a few guys I'd heard of before. I met Ralphus, the head of Jericho Security at that show.
Oh, I remember Ralphus.
But yeah, so like I remember going to that show. That was a lot of fun. But yeah, so I would just love to go down to New York next year, not for Mania, honestly, just for everything else that's going to be happening while we're there, while it's there.
I wouldn't blame you. I mean, that would be amazing. And I actually have a coworker whose son's driving down to New Orleans to go to WrestleMania, and I told him, I was like, look, make sure you go to Access. And he had never even heard of Access. And yeah. I went on a whim. We weren't planning on going, and it was like, yeah, we had time to kill before the show, and like, you know what? I think tickets were like $65. So we're like, this is a little expensive, but let's just go. And then, you know, I just had a blast. I mean, if you wanted autographs and stuff, you're going to spend the all day waiting in line. So other than Gerald Briscoe, I just kind of skipped everybody else. He didn't have a line. Yeah. So, but you know, they had like the Undertaker's, all the coffins used and everything. They had Andre the Giant's suit. And
see, I would love to see all that stuff.
It was like a Hall of Fame. You know, they had Vince's limo that had been blown up and part of John Cena's car collection and lots of really cool stuff. They even had a ring that was cut out and they showed like what's underneath the ring and where Hornswoggle hides and all this crap. And you know, but it was worth $65 to me. So I highly recommend it.
See, that's awesome. I would love to see that as well.
Yeah.
I don't know. See, for me, a lot of times, like, and that's the other thing too. It's like, for me, it's like, I'm gonna need a couple grand to go down there with, to buy all the tickets to all the wrestling shows I want to go to get autographs and pictures with all the wrestlers I've never met before that I'd want to meet and see and everything. You know, it's, yeah, it'd be an expensive proposition, but man, what a great time that would be.
It would be, but you were right. That WrestleMania is not cheap. It is not cheap at all.
Well, especially the New York area. I mean, trying to get around there. I mean, if I don't drive down, I got to use transportation somehow to figure out if I do drive down. Got to pay for parking constantly. And then what was the other big thing I was thinking of? Oh, yeah. Like, just, again, everything is expensive as shit in New York. You know, hotels, food, everything. I mean, I went to Shake Shack, had an absolutely amazing burger. I mean, it was pressed flattened patties that were cooked perfectly and a little crispy and caramelized on the edges. The cheese was beautifully melted. The bacon was unbelievable. The Shake Shack sauce, the little toasted bun. It was $11.
Ouch. Yeah.
You know, like, I would buy one again in a blink. Not gonna lie. But still, you know what I mean? Like, the prices down there are so high. It's kind of crazy. And the thing is, like, well, if I'm gonna travel, then screw it. I should just travel to, like, someplace warm where I know it's going to be warm down there. Because, you know, even April in New York is questionable. Because it's only a couple more weeks away from when I went right now. And it was chilly cold. So, I don't know. I guess one more thing. We've been talking for almost a couple hours now. And there was one thing I wanted to ask your opinion on. The Fabulous Moolah.
Oh, that was a clusterfuck.
They put her name on the Battle Royal. The internet lost their minds, saying that she's a pimp, she's a piece of shit. They shouldn't associate themselves with that, blah, blah, blah. Snickers is like, hey, we've been hearing some negative stuff. And so they pulled her name, and they're just calling it the Woman's Battle Royal, which is probably what they should call it anyways. What's your thought?
Well, you know, it's complicated. I'm not one to grab the pitchfork. Yeah. You know, I'm way more laid back than that, I guess. However, it's been pretty common knowledge for the last at least 5 years that I know of that the Fabulous Moolah was a piece of shit. You know, yeah. she really, her contribution to women's wrestling history is highly over exaggerated. Because if you've ever watched a Moolah match, it's pretty fucking bad.
I have. Yep.
You know, she did a headlock, and that was about it. You know, I think even in the late 90s, I mean, we saw that when Mae Young was taking crazy bumps, and you're just like, you know, wow, everybody says the Moolah was the greatest women's champion, but this lady's, you know, in her 80s, the Dudleys are throwing her through tables. I mean, come on, there's got to be something more to this story. I don't think they should have named it that anyway. I mean, if they were going to name it, I don't, it's such a hard thing. I think you're right in just saying they should just call it the Women's Battle Royal. Yeah. I mean, they don't have a woman, unless you're going to go more recent, that you can name it after, that they can market appropriately. I did like the idea of doing like a Sensational Sherry type, using her name, but they don't do anything with her. I mean, she's not, you know, you never hear her name mentioned on anything. So I'm glad Snickers got involved. I hate that it took Snickers getting involved before the WWE responded. And what I hated more than anything was Stephanie McMahon's tweet about, it was like, oh, we heard you, WWE Universe, you know, the name's got to change, hashtag or whatever, you know, making it out like, hey, the fans did this, the fans really, you know, they were the great ones. And then she took the hashtag to use it for her own publicity. And right. I know she's a PR person, and I know she's trying to save face, and I get that. But her tweets a lot of times come off so condescending and so bitchy.
Right.
Like, I see it, and I'm like, you know what? You're the problem with the WWE. Like, this attitude is what's wrong with the WWE, in my opinion. So,
all right. So, for me, I had heard a lot of negative stuff about Moolah. Like, there's that Lipstick and Dynamite documentary. Have you seen that?
I have, yes.
Oh,
great,
it's phenomenal,
documentary,
isn't it?
Great documentary.
There's a lot of negativity about Mula in there. Did you read the article? It came out 8 years ago now, I want to say, but about Sweet Georgia Brown.
Yes.
Unbelievable article. And if you read that and some other things and some other testimonials from people, like, it really, it does not paint Mula in a very positive light whatsoever. And again, oh, she was a champion for 57 years. Well, that's highly debatable, you know, because it was for multiple promotions. There's title changes that allegedly happened that was never recognized. I mean, on and on and on. I actually did see Mula Russell live.
Did you?
Yeah, back in 2002 or early 2003. I know October 19th, 2002, her and Mae Young did an autograph signing for Breast Cancer Awareness Day at the Main Mall down in Portland. The promoter for Main Event Wrestling brought them in, a short-lived promotion. And I went down, got my picture taken with them, got my book autographed and my trading card signed and everything. And then fast forward, I think it was December of that year, actually, her and Mae Young came back and they wrestled a tag team match where they won. And Mae Young took a body slam off the top rope to the ring. So, yeah.
Lady's insane.
Yeah, yeah. So it was kind of cool seeing Fabulous Woman and Mae Young wrestle live in, you know, the 2002. But anyhow, so, you know, I've heard all of the negative things, you know, about what she's done, what she'd done in the past, on and on and on. And then, you know, Snickers gets involved and they drop her name from the Battle Royal and everything. And then I start seeing things pop up in my timeline that Selena Majors, a.k.a. Bambi, is sharing. And there's a new group on Facebook called Fabulous Mula and Ladies of Camp Mula. And FabulousMula.com and this and that. And they are coming to Mula's aid, if you will. And they've released YouTube videos from, like, Joyce Grable defending Mula, saying that this stuff isn't happening. They've released videos from, like, Leilani Kai. They have Peggy Lee Leather. She also has come out to discuss, you know, to discussing what's happening with Mula and coming, standing up for Mula, coming to her aid. These are all people that were allegedly trained by Mula or whatever. You also have on Medusa's podcast, she had Leilani Kai on, and they talked about that. Now, I haven't heard it yet. I just found out about it. I will listen to that. Diamond Lil, Winona Littleheart have also come out. Brittany Brown has come out just in defense of Mula. Like I said, Joyce Grable, Leilani Kai, Brittany Brown, Diamond Lil, Winona Littleheart, Peggy Lee Leather, Mula's daughter, Mary Austin, obviously, has also come out in defense of Mula. And it's, I'm not trying to downplay anything they're saying. Also, Mary Austin, they've released a YouTube video of it, but she talks about Sweet Georgia Brown, which I haven't listened to yet either. So it's all things I plan on listening to, but I do think it's kind of interesting that all of a sudden all these, you know, these, to me, I know who Peggy Lee Leather and Bambi and others are that are coming out speaking on her behalf, but I don't hear anyone who was brought up saying that they were treated poorly by Mula coming out to say, oh, that's not true. You know, like we've heard a lot of people talk about how Wendi Richter was treated unjustly and unfairly by Mula, but she has yet to come out to say it happened or to say otherwise against it. You know what I mean?
Right.
There's been a few others like that that were spoken about that, like, for instance, I know Luna Vachon's passed away now, but she spoke out. She had spoken out in the past against Mula, basically saying Mula pimped her out to somebody and she felt like she had to do what she had to do and everything like that. Or Penny Banner, who has also passed away. I remember reading in her book, she did not have a lot of positive things to say about the Fabulous Mula. But no one who's I've read, Velvet McIntyre, Judy Martin, Wendi Richter, just to name those three, I've heard that people say that they had negative experiences from Mula or were treated inappropriately by Mula, but I've never heard them say they were, or now them come out and say, no, that's not true. So, you know, it's I don't know. It's interesting to me.
It is. The guys on the subreddit, the Squared Circle, they put together a huge list because they've been on this Moolah thing for years.
Peruse that. Holy crap.
Yeah, they were champions of it. There was a great post. I'll send you. It's got a bunch of different sources, I guess. I haven't looked into it that much other than, you know, the initial controversy. I was like, well, I saw this coming, you know, and Vince should have saw this coming, you know. Yeah. So it is what it is. I'm glad they moved on. I have more of a problem with Stephanie's tweets than I even had with the name. Yeah. And I have even more of a problem with them continuing this women's empowerment, which is their marketing. I know it's marketing, but they play it off like they really care about women's wrestling. And then they go run a show in Saudi Arabia where women can't be on the card and every title's defended except for the women's titles.
Yeah, I saw that as well. There's going to have 7 title matches. Women aren't going to be able to wrestle on the card. But that may not be WWE. That may just be the country they're going to, what you're saying. They're talking about women empowerment, but we're going to have this big card in this place where women aren't allowed to even be on the show.
Yeah, we're putting our profits over our true, you know, care about women's empowerment, you know. Yeah. And, well, that and a 50-man Royal Rumble is a horrible idea. We saw what happens when you do 40 men. But
I was
there
live for the 40-man one.
Yeah?
That's the one I went to in Boston, yep.
So
I'm still going to watch it. It's going to be a network special. I'm still going to watch it.
Right.
I'm not going to not watch it.
I want to end on one last good announcement here. Okay. You know, I don't know how many listeners, maybe you're in the North Carolina or in the South area, look at traveling, but we have our annual WrestleCade here every November, which is our big convention, and they announced their first guest earlier this week or last week.
I don't know. Tell me.
It is a great one. It's on a bucket list of guest people I would love to get a photo with. Ultimo Dragon is coming to Charlotte.
That's tremendous.
Or Winston-Salem. I'm sorry. Winston-Salem. So, yes. Ultimo Dragon
tremendous.
With Sonny Ono. They've already shot some like little video vignettes and, and
cool.
stuff. Yeah, talk about a great first guest. I mean, that was one hell of an announcement. And
man, if only they could get all the belts from the J Crown there to take a photo with him. God.
Yes. Oh, it would be so wonderful. And I mean, and a weird thing is, and they're I've been tweeting them a lot about trying to get Flying Brian Pillman Jr. You know, I really want to see him there.
I've been trying to get Randy to bring him up to Limitless Wrestling here in Maine.
Yeah, and they actually tweeted me back, and they're actually working on bringing him in for AML because they own WrestleK and they run WrestleK as well.
Yeah.
In addition to maybe WrestleK, which sounds really, really great. And they did say, though, however, a lot of the guests that usually come to the AML are automatically booked for WrestleK almost.
Yeah.
This year, it doesn't look like that's going to happen, so they really want you to come out to the AML events, which, you know, I don't blame them.
It makes sense to have some talent that are, you know, hey, if you want to see them, they're not going to be at WrestleCade. They're going to be at the shows, though. That does make sense.
Well, I had to share the Ultimate Dragon because I knew you'd appreciate it. And
yeah, that's
awesome. Young whippersnappers might not, but Ultimate Dragon was always one of my favorites to watch. And it's going to be great to see him.
Well, I'm going to Ring of Honor's War of the Worlds show in Lowell, Massachusetts. It's where New Japan does the joint show with Ring of Honor, and they have, you know, a huge stacked lineup of New Japan talent. The last two Ring of Honor shows I've been to, they've had a few guys from New Japan because they typically do have a couple guys. But this is the big tour they do where they have, you know, all kinds of New Japan talent. And I'm just hoping and hoping, and I'm not going to say praying, but I am hoping and hoping and hoping that Jushin Thunder Liger is booked on the show and that he does the meet and greet pre-show because There's no way I'm not doing that. Absolutely no way I'm not meeting and getting my picture taken with Liger. Absolutely. I can't. I have to.
Of course.
Yeah. So I can't wait. It's of the old school Japanese talent. Like my two favorites were Muda and Liger growing up. And I went down in 2012. I went down, got my picture taken with Muda in New Jersey. Got to see him wrestle live, so that was amazing. And then, there's a bunch of Japanese talent now I'd love to meet and get pictures with and this and that and everything, but for those old school guys back in the day, that I grew up watching that I like the most. You know, the next one now is definitely, you know, it's Liger, and I feel like this, you know, he's in his 50s. He still comes over here, but he's never been up this way. So if I feel like if this might be my only shot.
It definitely might be, so you gotta jump all over that.
Yeah, and then to see him wrestle live that night too, that would be another pretty like bucket list checkoff thing, is to see Liger wrestle live. Because again, I mean, that's a guy I've been watching have kick-ass matches since the friggin', you know, early 90s with him and like Brian Pillman, for instance. Oh my god, Liger needs to wrestle Brian Pillman Jr.
Yeah, there you go.
Maybe they'll do it at WrestleCade or at the end of the show.
Maybe.
That would be awesome. So cool. All right, brother. Well, let's wrap this up. It's 1:30 in the morning.
Yep.
Well, you can find me on the Twitterverse there at SuperstarML.
Yep, and I'm over at Lucha Koopa.
Yeah, make sure you check out our blogs. We have I got the WrestlingInsomniac.com.
Yep, and I have the VideoStoreCounter.com.
And then you have your 90s horror review.
I do, 90horrorreview.com as well. I post on there. I've watched lots of 90s horror movies this week, so got a lot to post.
Look forward to some updates. And excuse me, you can find my buddy Aaron at Aaron S. Bell at the Twitter, and then Ronnie's RonBar316, and then what the hell, Cousin Paul is Who's Paul, if you want to talk to them on Twitter for some reason. The show is at 1000 Holds Pod, and then Facebook is Podcast for 1000 Holds. Go give us a like. Hey, and if you haven't yet, go give me a like over on the Wrestling Insomniac on my Facebook, because I pretty much only use Facebook to self-advertise and market and push my blogs and podcast. So, there. Yeah.
That's what social media is for.
Yeah. Oh, and I'm on Instagram. I'm at SuperstarML as well. So, go look stuff over there. I post pictures when I go to wrestling. Although I'm pretty sure I didn't put any up from the garden this time for some reason. Let's see.
You did not.
I didn't. Yeah, that's actually kind of surprising. I'll throw a few up here in the next few days. But typically when I go to a show, oh no, I did put up one from the garden. I did in black and white.
Yeah, but a few days after. Yeah.
Yeah. It was a few days after. But typically, like I'm at a show, I will post a picture of me with somebody, and then you can look at my cat Vivian Vachon. That's right, named after the great Vivian Vachon. All right, thanks.